Wanted man in Buffalo, wanted man in Kansas City, wanted man in Ohio, wanted man in Mississippi.
So good morning from Saturday at Origins 2008. I'm Luke Crane, and I'm sitting here with Paul Tevis on a momentous occasion. No, not just Saturday at Origins 2008, but almost 1 week after Paul Tevis has announced that he has recorded his last podcast for Have Games Will Travel. Both a sad and joyous announcement.
That's pretty much my feelings about it, too.
So Paul, you've been recording Have Games Will Travel for 3 years, almost on the dot.
Yeah, it was actually at Origins 3 years ago that I first heard about podcasting and first encountered it, and I went home and I listened to a couple of shows and I said, oh, I can do that. So yeah, Origins really was the genesis of this 3 years ago.
Interesting. So, right, and then you released your first podcast pretty soon after then, because it was July 20th is when you posted.
I had just come back from Comic-Con in San Diego, and I'd been doing some game demos there. I'd been looking at some stuff, and I came back and I recorded it based on what I'd been doing there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So what was the seed of inspiration at Origins?
It was actually, I ran into Mike Sackpole and Mer Lafferty. Mike is on the Gamma Board, and Mer is, of course, the grand dame of podcasting, Geek Fu Action Grip, I Should Be Writing, and I had met Mike before, and Mike was just getting into this podcasting thing, and he was really excited about it, and he was telling everybody about it. And Mar, of course, was doing her show, and I was talking to them. I said, this is kind of interesting. And then I went home, and I downloaded a couple of podcasts and listened to them, and I said, yeah, I could do that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get started as a podcast, but to actually create a quality podcast is difficult, I mean, how did things change? So from that first episode, did you go back and listen to them? Do you listen to that first episode now and you cringe?
Absolutely. I try to avoid listening to it as much as possible. which, of course, the curse of being a podcaster is that your first episode is almost always your most downloaded episode. Like, if you look at your stats over the years, I believe it's actually number two right now, but that only changed recently. So, you know, of the 111 episodes I've got out there, everyone's listening to the crappiest one. But, The big shift for me after the first, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 episodes, there were two big changes that happened. One was when I first started doing the show, I said, all right, the show isn't about me. It's about the games. I'm going to talk about the games. I'm going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about myself because I didn't think that I was particularly interesting.
Mm-hmm. You're not.
Yeah, I mean, my instincts were right there. And, you know, the one thing that I see far too much of on the internet is people talking about themselves and not actually talking about something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I gradually realized as I was doing the show, and particularly as I was doing reviews, I read a really excellent article on doing board game reviews. Mm-hmm. And the thing that the guy said, and I completely forgotten who wrote this, but he says, you know, reviews are inherently subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And you should embrace the inherently subjective nature of the review and really take it and make it your review. And so one of the things that I do, I mean, you called me on this. One of the things that I do in my reviews a lot is I say, I like this.
Right.
And then I'll tell you why I like that. And that, for me, is the big focuser when I'm doing my reviews, is looking at a game and saying, all right, what is it that I like about this? Because obviously I'm not going to talk about it otherwise. And then explaining why I like it, because that gives other people the reference points that they need to figure out whether or not they would like it. By actually explaining my rationale and explaining why it is that I feel a particular way. And not just trying to say, oh, this game is good because it does this,
mm-hmm.
or because this game is this way,
mm-hmm.
and sticking only to those objective truths, as it were. For me, it's now become a very subjective experience, and I invest a lot of myself in my reviews. No one else could do the reviews that I do because they're not me.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have my biases and my preferences and my... so that's the biggest change since the early episodes. And it took me a long time to get over my prejudice against myself.
When do you feel like you hit your stride?
I think... I was going to say about episode 80, but, you know, that means I'm kind of a late bloomer. But honestly, that's kind of true. I mean, I was doing it kind of irregularly for a while. And that was the first point... And that would have been about a year and a half ago, actually. I packed in a lot of episodes very early, also because I did a lot of convention shows. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of episodes that came out of specific cons where I drop like 7 or 8 episodes over the course of 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But that was the point where I really felt like I was consistently getting it together, and every episode was actually pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I was getting out pretty regularly, and definitely hitting my stride. Mm-hmm. There were other great spots in there, but that was where it really got consistent.
Sure, sure. Just as a frame of reference, so you're ending on episode 111 for Have Games Will Travel.
Yes.
Now, does that include all the podcasts you've done for Have Games Will Travel? Like, because there are Gen Con specials and SoCal specials and stuff like that.
So this was something that that Ken Height called me on with my grand renumber. What I basically realized originally, because I was going to do the regular Have Games Will Travel episodes, were going to be me talking about stuff, doing reviews, talking about whatever. And then I had these specials, which were at a con, recording, things like that. Eventually, I realized those interviews were as much a part of the regular show as the reviews. Mm-hmm. So I picked a point at which I said, okay, this episode is now 65, because if we go back and we actually count up all the previous ones. So it jumped at some point from like 30 to 65.
Okay.
But what it is that I'm doing now is basically, I started maybe a year ago or so doing these very short form, like 5-minute shows, mm-hmm. That I call For a Few Games More, which is very often just me reacting to something that I heard, talking a little bit about it, trying to poke people and say, what do you think about this? This is something that's fascinating to me. What do you think? Let's talk and maybe start some dialogue on that. That I'm really enjoying doing. And that's what I'm going to continue doing going forward on that feed, mm-hmm. because I think that's where it is that I need to be focusing my energy, is challenging myself and stretching myself. Because honestly, I feel like that's something that not a lot of people are doing and that I'm really enjoying, and that's where I need to start looking. A lot of people are doing absolutely fantastic interviews, yourself included, there are a lot of people who are doing pretty good reviews, and so I really feel like the other stuff that I was doing, I'd gotten to the point where I'd pushed myself as far as I could, mm-hmm. in that format, and now I need to push myself to do something else.
Right, because it seems like those 5-minute bursts are counter to even to what your talents are as far as your extensive reviews.
Yes.
Which your extensive reviews are amazing. They're some of the best reviews out there, in my opinion. And I'm completely subjective for various reasons. But also just, just as far as your own premise, basically, for your podcast, doing a 5-minute burst that's about kind of your own opinion and whatnot just seems like, you've kind of come full circle.
Absolutely, and it's really been interesting to realize that I can take. There was another thing that happened. I for a while was actually scripting my shows. This was in the like episode 20 or so range, mm-hmm. where I was writing the whole dang thing out because it massively cut down on my editing time. Turns out I'm actually a faster editor than I am a writer. And also, more importantly, I can train myself to need less editing more quickly than I can learn to write faster. So eventually I just said, screw this. I'm just going to, I'm going to work off a page of notes and I'm going to go. And what I've realized is that from 5 lines on a page of notes about a game that it is that I'm reviewing, I can talk for 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is that sometimes I need to talk for 5 minutes. And you're right. That is where it is that I'm sort of looking at heading and developing those skills a lot more. And in a lot of cases, coming up with those meaty bullet points before I turn on the microphone, but still not having to spend 3 days coming up with my brilliant thing that I want to share with the world.
So, is that true? Do you really sit and think about your episode and what you're going to say for 3 days before?
I often, usually I'll stew over it in the sense that I'll be like, okay, what do I want to talk about in the episode I'm doing in 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Burning Empires. Oh, I want to talk about Burning Empires. I'll make some notes to myself, mm-hmm. and then over the course of those 2 weeks, every few days I'll come back to that outline, and I'll fill things in.
Sure.
Because I have a very terrible memory, and I'll be remembering. I carry my cell phone with me and has a little audio recorder on it, because otherwise I'll think like, oh yeah, be sure to mention the currency and the infection mechanics. And then like 2 days later, I'll listen to my phone and I'll be like, oh right, I needed to do that. So yeah, that was my usual prep was, mm-hmm. was just slowly, gradually. I actually, as listeners may be able to tell, I think best out loud. I very often will be talking and figure out what it is that I actually meant.
Sure, sure. I completely understand, but I think that's code for you that you just don't shut up. I think that's
yeah, absolutely.
But you also you joke there that you're looking for the brilliant thing to say. Do you put a lot of pressure on yourself? Like do you beat yourself up about being like really insightful and clever?
I think sometimes more than I need to. But one of the things that over the last year or so is that I've become a lot more comfortable with. Going with what I got,
mm-hmm.
And that's partly an influence of the sorts of games that I've been playing and some stuff that I've been doing in improv, where we've really been pushing ourselves to not worry about using up the awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pressure yourself to come up with the perfect thing.
Sure.
Because throw the thing that's perfectly good out there, and then we'll knock it around. We'll figure out what's cool, and we'll make up some other cool stuff on top of it. And also just a general sort of coming to terms with, like, where I'm at in my life and what I'm doing creative professionally and things like that, and realizing that it doesn't need to be brilliant, that I just need to get it out there and move on. In a lot of cases, I've definitely done some shows where I've listened to them afterwards and gone, that probably could have been better, but it is done.
Right. My dear friend Jared has a saying that, what is it? Good is the enemy of done. So sometimes done is what you need.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have a... It's housekeeping. We're busy. And I won't edit that out.
No. It's cinema verite.
It's
not cinema.
Podcasting verite.
Yeah, there we go.
So you have a very interesting method of actually recording your podcast, which I find very fascinating. You recite to your library?
Yes. One of the things I discovered very early on, especially because I do the show by myself,
mm-hmm.
I have difficulty keeping my energy level up if I'm recording while I'm sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm having a conversation, like with you, for example, I can feed off your energy and we mm-hmm. go back and forth, and that's fine. But when I'm by myself, I need to stand up in order to record it, in order to keep the energy level where I need it. So I set up the microphone, actually now it's in my bedroom. It used to be in my garage at my old house.
Okay.
Because it's sort of the quietest spot in the house. And I face the bookshelves that are there along the wall because it's a nice sound-absorbing mass.
I was going to ask if that was a consideration.
Absolutely. One of the things that people don't talk about very much in podcast production, they talk about equipment, they talk about microphones, mixing boards. The space you record in is tremendously important,
mm-hmm.
and it just doesn't get talked about very much because it's sometimes the thing you have the least control over.
Sure.
But yeah, when we moved in December, I was going through the house trying to figure out, where can I record in here? We need some more furniture in this room because it's too live. Because the new house has all hardwood floors,
mm-hmm.
And the old house was carpeted. So what I'll actually do is I'll lay down some down comforters on the floor in the bedroom to help deaden the sound.
So, down comforters, microphone stand, standing up,
yep.
facing the bookcase,
yep.
Wildly gesticulating?
I do talk with my hands a good bit,
mm-hmm.
But there's nobody else in the room, so I'm exhorting my travel guides, I think, because that's about what it's at eye level. It's a bunch of moon guides and rough guides of, to Scotland, and that's what I'm telling about these great games.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a funny picture.
And I just have a strange detailed question. Where are the notes then? Do they clip to the mic stand? Are they leaning against Shakespeare's complete works?
No, that would be far too down on the floor. I usually hold them. I actually am recording right next to my bed. So I've usually got just a single sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll either hold them in one hand as I'm, I'll sort of talk off axis on that.
Mm-hmm.
Or oftentimes I'll actually have them just sitting on the bed and I can glance down and see what it is I need to see as I'm doing that. So,
yeah, that image often replays in my head when I listen to your podcasts. Is right, you standing in front of your bookshelves,
gesticulating wildly.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's pretty accurate.
Shaking your hand. I really like.
Yes. But what's really cool about it, and of course Luke's laughing because he can see the hand gestures that I'm making, and nobody at home
right.
can.
But you can imagine them.
Yes.
I trust it. I trust your role playing game imaginations. So this being. A kind of retrospective. Now we'll cue the montage.
Right.
And
clip show.
Some treacly music. So do you have a favorite episode, first of all, out of your 3 years of hard work?
Oh, that's a tough one. All of my children. I love them all. Naturally, no, I hate some of them.
Some of them are very ugly.
Some of them are terrible. Honestly, I think the episode I'm probably proudest of actually is that Burning Empires review.
Oh,
just because it nearly killed me to do it. But it was so something that I wanted to do and so something that I felt when I finished it. I had to do it 3 times because of some stupid things on my end, but it was really good as a result of having to do that.
So, all right, so the Burning Empires episode was episode 108? 108
or 109.
108. All right, so very near the end.
Yeah, very near the end. One of those things that I wouldn't have done if I'd gone with my initial instinct to end the show at 100, which I almost did, actually.
Right. Yeah, I remember that, and I was surprised, mildly surprised that you continued, and I was like, yeah, he can't give it up. Anyway, so to go back to the Burning Empires episode, you said you had to record it 3 times, so you're 3 years in and you're still making what kind of mistakes?
Forgetting to turn on the mixing board. Actually, that was only the second time. The first time was that it was just terrible. It wasn't terrible. The organization was just completely wrong. And it was like, well, I don't know why I thought this was a good outline. Mm-hmm. And I immediately sort of went back and redid it. And I was like, well, the book does it in this order. Turns out that's a good order to do this in. But yeah, the second time I just completely, I turned on the recorder, but I forgot to turn on the mixing board. And, yeah, that happens. But it was a mixed blessing because when I finished recording it, I sort of said to myself, well, that was pretty good. That was definitely better than the first time. It probably could have been a little bit better, but, you know, at least it's done. Then I open up the audio file, and it's, you know, 1 hour and 15 minutes of silence.
So what's your reaction, though, when you see something like that? I mean, I'm sure that's not the first time you've made a mistake like that. I mean, are you...
What do you mean? I've never made mistakes like that before.
I'm the problem, that's right.
Yes.
I mean, does your heart fall, or do you have a resignation?
No, it's actually much more angry than that. I'm like, you moron, what were you just doing? And there's a lot of clenching my fists and gnashing my teeth and sort of beating myself up about it. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I get a chance to do it again. It'll be better this time. All right. Hmm. And that's very true. I mean, there are a number of episodes where I've recorded them and afterwards said, that was crap. I should do that again. And I'll just, and that's what I'll do. Oftentimes it's not even necessarily because of what I'm saying, but because of the energy level. That's something I'm really big into is making sure that I'm up for a show and that I'm excited about it and the reason I do the show is because of the energy and passion that I have and the enthusiasm I have for these fantastic games. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that carries through. That is the thing that I think I bring to the game that has made the show so successful. Mm-hmm. Is that because I'm so passionate about these things, because I'm so excited about these things, and because I take the care to actually get that across to make sure that passion comes through, other people get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really important thing for me doing the show.
Yeah, a clearly successful model. I think you have transmitted that enthusiasm remarkably through hundreds of hours of recorded material. Okay, so I'll only keep you for a few minutes longer.
All right.
We'll talk a little bit about the interview series. So
how
many interviews have you done for Have Games Will Travel?
Probably on the order of 20 or 30.
20 or 30 interviews.
Thereabouts.
That's a fair number.
Yeah.
And you've interviewed everyone from Ken Hype. Well, so that's like 15 of those, right?
You're right.
and Darren Watts and all sorts of other hardcore industry folks.
Yeah, Chris Primus, Ken Brown from Tri-King, Dan Kelly from Zygote Games, Matt Forbeck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a whole bunch of people.
Right, and then you've also taken the little fish, too. Those are some of the big fish in the gaming industry. You've taken some smaller, unknown folks like myself.
Who are you again?
Yeah, exactly. And put us in the spotlight. Do you have a favorite interview? Do you have a favorite subject, Ken Hite?
See, the thing about Ken is that he just assumes that he's going to be on my show. And so he says, so when are we recording? He was somewhat shocked to discover that I'd ended the show and was then trying, like, quickly looking around for other podcasters to be on their shows. Ken and I enjoy doing it simply because we've done it enough and we know each other well enough and we hang out at cons that we have the rapport that's necessary to go through that stuff. And also because Ken has a lot of insight into the industry and into gaming products and things like that. And it's mm-hmm. fun to get that perspective.
Sure.
Although I don't think he's my favorite interview. I have to think about who that would be. I don't know. The thing that I love about doing interviews, and you and I talked about this real briefly in the bar last night. Mm-hmm. The thing I love about doing interviews is I get to have really interesting conversations with people I find fascinating.
Sure.
And the side benefit is that it gets recorded and the internet can listen in on it.
Right.
In a lot of ways, the show has been an excuse for me to sit down with people who have really fascinating ideas and for me to dig into them. It's funny because I do this thing at Gen Con called Inside the Game Designer Studio, where I sort of parody James Lipton and
right.
interview game designers.
Right, with Jared Sorensen.
Yes, it was Jared's brainchild. He just asked me to tag along and be insufferable, and I was glad to help out. But the thing is that, like, I had never actually watched Inside the Actor's Studio before we decided to do that. I started mm-hmm. watching it, and I just found myself going, you know what's so infuriating about this James Lipton guy is that he's not actually interviewing people. He already knows the answer
right.
to all the questions that he's going to ask, and he merely allows his guest to let the audience in on what he already knows,
sure.
which is the exact antithesis of what it is that I want to do in an interview. In an interview, I want to sit down with somebody, and I want to learn something that I didn't know before. I want to find that thing that I didn't even know we were going to talk about when we sat down, that the other person finds fascinating, that I find fascinating, and go for that. And so I never know, like, what the cool gem is going to come out of an interview. In some ways, it's kind of a crapshoot. But mm-hmm. but so for me, it's all about watching and listening and trying to find that thing, and then it comes out. And I'm like, ah, this is so awesome. And other people get to hear it, too, and I can put it on the show. So that's a long-winded way of avoiding your question of who my favorite interview is. but it would be somebody where that happened.
No, I think it's an excellent answer, an excellent dodge.
Yeah.
I would have given you an advantage die.
Fair enough.
So just a couple more then. Let me find my place. Where was I? So, all right. So then is there anything that you have learned doing Have Games Will Travel that, you know, you're going to take away into other stuff? Is there any, like, basically, where has Paul Tevez grown over the past 3 years? Doing Have Games Will Travel.
So I have this weird self-confidence issue when it comes to analysis. I tend to think of myself as a not particularly analytical person, but then people point me at the game reviews that I've done, and I sort of go, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. My good friend Christina and I have this great relationship because she's a graduate student in religious studies, and her background is actually in anthropology,
mm-hmm.
and she's incredibly analytical. And so she'll always tell me, it's like, oh yeah, well you do this thing in the game because of this. And she's very good at hypothesis generation. My strength is actually in hypothesis testing, where it's, you know, she'll say that and I'll think about it for a moment and match up all the data that I've got and go, no, because of this. So I suspect it's actually this other thing. So we work really well together because she'll come up with these theories and I'll tell her whether or not.
You'll test them.
Right? Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm very good at. But I think that the... excuse me.
I'm killing you. I don't
know.
No. Glass of water.
I got some really hot tea over here. The problem is it's a little too hot right now. The thing that I've definitely taken away from it is the ability to sit down and turn on the mic and talk and not have to do a ton of editing, in part because I learned how to focus what it is that I want to say before I turn on the microphone. Those episodes that I've had to throw away, it's because my thoughts were not gathered enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten to the point now where it actually doesn't take me very long to do that, to really know what it is that I'm going to say, especially on a solo show. I mean, it's not like someone's going to interrupt me suddenly and go, oh, what about this? Oh, crap. You know, that doesn't happen. To focus those ideas, to get them out there, and to then turn the microphone off.
Sure.
I really try to, on those shows, make it as succinct and yet informative as I can. And that's definitely not something I was doing when I started the show. There's a reason why I had to edit the crap out of the show at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. But also just the, like, I definitely have learned a lot more about how to break down games and how to look at it as what they actually do.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing this yesterday when I was playing Grey Ranks, and I suddenly realized there are like, this is the third time I've played the game now,
mm-hmm.
and there are like six things that I didn't realize were going on
mm-hmm.
that I was like, oh yeah, this and this and this and this, oh, that's cool. And those are definitely skills that I didn't have 3 years ago, and I think in part have come from from doing the show and sort of trying to figure out, you know, when I say, I like this thing, and I force myself to come up with the because.
Right.
That has definitely been useful to me.
Excellent, excellent. So you won an Annie for Half Games Will Travel?
Yeah. It was kind of shocking.
Any award-winning Paul Tevis. I didn't introduce you like that. I didn't want to intimidate anybody.
Because you didn't want me to leap over the table and punch you.
Well, that's not true, really.
All right.
So any award-winning podcast for Paul Tevis, what now?
I've got a couple of irons in the fire. I'm going to still continue to do the For a Few Games More shows because I really love those, and that's definitely an area where I need to challenge myself more, mm-hmm. and I want to grow more. I'm continuing to do The Voice of the Revolution with Brendan Taylor, which Brendan and I are, I think we're starting to hit our stride out of that and starting to really figure that show out.
Mm-hmm.
The episode that we recorded last week, mm-hmm. I think was by far the best one we've done, and I'm really excited about doing that because that still gives me an opportunity to do some of the review stuff and some of the interview stuff and things like that. A lot of things that I enjoy from Half Games Will Travel. So that will continue to go on. Personally, I'm also working on, I've got this game design that I'm working on that I'm hoping to publish sometime soon, but I'm a terribly slow writer. It's terrible when I'm not on deadline, because I just don't work on shit.
Yeah, those are skills.
Yes, that's another skill I'm looking forward to developing. The other thing that I'm doing, I'm playing a lot more games at home. I'm also doing a ton of improv, and I've just got a lot of stuff going on in my professional life as well. Part of the reason for this, part of what was going on in my life, is really looking at the things that I've been doing and sort of figuring out what commitments can I carry forward, do I want to carry forward as other things in my life change, as I continue to develop professionally, as I continue to take on new hobbies, new interests, and things like that. So,
sure.
It was one of those, I ended up stepping down off of, the staff from the RPG Con in Los Angeles that I'd been on staff for, which was partly that was partly pre-planned, because when I came on board, I said, I'm going to do this for 2 years and I'm going to be done.
Right.
And I've just sort of been going through and saying, all right, what are these things that I have commitments to now that I can sort of, that I should move on from? And this was one of those things. So, and I also, there's some more writing projects that I want to work on. One of the things that Have Games Will Travel in some ways has done is actually stunted my progress as a writer, because I have not been writing. I've been just turning on the microphone and seeing what brilliant things come out. And that is a very, it's a skill that I'm much better at than writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been relying on that a lot. And in some ways, I sort of need to get back to what it was that I said I was doing when I started all this, I was originally using the show as a sort of marketing tool for myself to get some writing work. But if it turns out that I'm not, you know, a great writer or a fast enough writer or things like that, then maybe that didn't work out quite well, did it?
Perhaps it didn't work quite as planned.
No, but it actually worked out quite well in other aspects.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. All right. We're done.
Woo!
Cool. Next interview.
There's somebody set to grab me anywhere that I might be. And wherever you might look tonight, you might get a glimpse of me. Wanted man in California, wanted man in Buffalo, wanted man in Kansas City.